Cambridge Certificate of Proficiency in English Listening Test. Test 4. I am going to give you the instructions for this test. I shall introduce each part of the test and give you time to look at the questions. At the start of each piece, you will hear this sound. You will hear each piece twice. Remember, while you are listening, write your answers on the question paper. You will have 5 minutes at the end of the test to copy your answers onto the separate answer sheet. There will now be a pause. Please ask any questions now, because you must not speak during the test. Now open your question paper and look at part one. You will hear three different extracts. For questions 1 to 6, choose the answer A, B or C, which fits best according to what you hear. There are two questions for each extract. Extract 1.
Sarah, what is online now?
Basically, we want to achieve a networked nation. So, Online Now is a campaign to get at least 95% of the population online in the next 2 years.
Why such a rush?
We have to rush because we're just being flooded with data. Every single day, for example, the government's saying, comment on our budgets, important things that are going to affect communities deeply. At the end of most advertising, it's get a special deal online. So we can't wait because society is splintering as we speak. I don't want to live in a community where a huge number of people are being excluded from the conversation that everyone else is having.
But if everyone's going to be online, where will the equipment come from?
We're not advocating that everyone has a computer at home. There'll always be people for whom this is too expensive. We have to be pragmatic about what we can do. There's been so much IT investment into communities, into schools, into health centres, into libraries. I would like the government to consider better ways of exploiting those bits of technology.
Sarah, what is online now?
Basically, we want to achieve a networked nation. So, online now is a campaign to get at least 95% of the population online in the next 2 years.
Why such a rush?
We have to rush because we're just being flooded with data. Every single day, for example, the government's saying, comment on our budgets, important things that are going to affect communities deeply. At the end of most advertising, it's get a special deal online. So we can't wait because society is splintering as we speak. I don't want to live in a community where a huge number of people are being excluded from the conversation that everyone else is having.
But if everyone's going to be online, where will the equipment come from?
We're not advocating that everyone has a computer at home. There'll always be people for whom this is too expensive. We have to be pragmatic about what we can do. There's been so much IT investment into communities, into schools, into health centres, into libraries. I would like the government to consider better ways of exploiting those bits of technology.
Extract 2.
This stone pestle comes from Papua New Guinea. It stands about 35 centimetres tall and the business end is a stone bulb about the size of a cricket ball, and you can feel that it's been used a lot. Above the bulb, the handle is very easy to grasp, and its upper part's been shaped in a way that's got nothing to do with making food. It looks like a bird with outstretched wings and a long neck dipping forward. We think it's about 8,000 years old. So we know that at that time, farmers in Papua New Guinea grew a starchy tuber called taro, while in the Middle East they were cultivating grasses, types of wheat, and in China, rice. But what's interesting is that in their natural state, you can't eat any of these plants. You have to grind them or soak them or boil them first. So why choose them? Well, The answer is that as humans expanded across the globe, we had to compete for our food with other animals. So we went for food that was difficult, and that gave us a competitive advantage. This stone pestle comes from Papua New Guinea. It stands about 35 centimeters tall, and the business end is a stone bulb about the size of a cricket ball, and you can feel that it's been used a lot. Above the bulb, the handle is very easy to grasp, and its upper part's been shaped in a way that's got nothing to do with making food. It looks like a bird with outstretched wings and a long neck dipping forward. We think it's about 8,000 years old. So we know that at that time, farmers in Papua New Guinea grew a starchy tuber called taro, while in the Middle East, they were cultivating grasses, types of wheat, and in China, rice. But what's interesting is that in their natural state, you can't eat any of these plants. You have to grind them or soak them or boil them first. So why choose them? Well, the answer is that as humans expanded across the globe, we had to compete for our food with other animals. So we went for food that was difficult, and that gave us a competitive advantage.
Extract 3. The health of our oceans is in decline, and yet there seems to be little attempt by governments or businesses to intervene. Global warming is one issue, increasing the acidity of the seawater to the detriment of marine life. But more seriously, despite regulations to stop overfishing and opportunistic fishermen landing illegal catches to sell on the black market, international laws seem to be interpreted at a local level. One conservation solution is to introduce more marine reserves, similar to one in the Pacific Ocean, where commercial fishing is banned and regular checks are carried out on all aspects of marine wildlife. Conservation projects focusing on single high-profile species, such as sharks and seabirds like the albatross, frequently draw attention away from the more serious damage being done to food sources like algae, which leads to the death of many more species. One proposal is to gather data from all the oceans and produce an ocean health index, which would then be published globally. From this, governments and businesses would be able to see instantly how their actions are affecting the health of the oceans close to them. The health of our oceans is in decline, and yet there seems to be little attempt by governments or businesses to intervene. Global warming is one issue, increasing the acidity of the seawater to the detriment of marine life. But more seriously, despite regulations to stop overfishing and opportunistic fishermen landing illegal catches to sell on the black market, international laws seem to be interpreted at a local level. One conservation solution is to introduce more marine reserves, similar to one in the Pacific Ocean, where commercial fishing is banned and regular checks are carried out on all aspects of marine wildlife. Conservation projects focusing on single high-profile species, such as sharks and seabirds like the albatross, frequently draw attention away from the more serious damage being done to food sources like algae, which leads to the death of many more species. One proposal is to gather data from all the oceans and produce an ocean health index, which would then be published globally. From this, governments and businesses would be able to see instantly how their actions are affecting the health of the oceans close to them. That is the end of part 1.